There was a long moment of total silence. The mechanic was staring at Galt. He was holding Galt's glance. And even he was able to recognize the nature of the sparkle in the dark green eyes. It was a sparkle of contemptuous mockery. He made a step back. In the incoherent dimness of his consciousness, in some wordless, shapeless, unintelligible manner, even he suddenly grasped the meaning of what was occurring in that cellar. He looked at Galt. He looked at the three men. He looked at the machine. He shuddered. He dropped his pliers and ran out of the room. Galt burst out laughing. The three men were backing slowly away from the machine. They were struggling not to allow themselves to understand what the mechanic had understood. "No!" cried Taggart suddenly, glancing at Galt and leaping forward. "No, I won't let him get away with it!" He fell down on his knees, groping frantically to find the aluminum cylinder of the vibrator. "I'll fix it. I'll work it myself. We've got to go on. We've got to break him."
"Take it easy, Jim," said Ferris uneasily, jerking him up to his feet.
Hadn't we better lay off for the night?" said Mooch pleadingly. He was looking at the door through which the mechanic had escaped, his glance part envy, part terror.
"No!"
cried Taggart. "Jim, hasn't he had enough? Don't forget, we have to be careful."
"No, he hasn't had enough. He hasn't even screamed yet."
"Jim," cried Mooch suddenly, terrified by something in Taggart's face. "We can't afford to kill him. You know it."
"I don't care. I want to break him. I want to hear him scream. I want—"
And then it was Taggart who screamed. It was a long, sudden, piercing scream, as if at some sudden sight, though his eyes were staring at space and seemed blankly sightless. The sight he was confronting was within him. The protective walls of emotion, of evasion, of pretense, of semi-thinking and pseudo-words built up by him through all of his years, had crashed in the span of one moment, the moment when he knew that he wanted Galt to die, knowing fully that his own death would follow. He was suddenly seeing the motive that had directed all the actions of his life. It was not his incommunicable soul, or his love for others, or his social duty, or any of the fraudulent sounds by which he had maintained his self-esteem. It was the lust to destroy whatever was living for the sake of whatever was not. It was the urge to defy reality by the destruction of every living value, for the sake of proving to himself that he could exist in defiance of reality and would never have to be bound by any solid, immutable facts. A moment ago, he had been able to feel that he hated Galt above all men, that the hatred was proof of Galt's evil, which he need define no further, that he wanted Galt to be destroyed for the sake of his own survival. Now he knew that he had wanted Galt's destruction at the price of his own destruction to follow. He knew that he had never wanted to survive. He knew that it was Galt's greatness he had wanted to torture and destroy. He was seeing it as greatness by his own admission, greatness by the only standard that existed, whether anyone chose to admit it or not, the greatness of a man who was master of reality in a manner no other had equaled. In the moment when he, James Taggart, had found himself facing the ultimatum, to accept reality or die, it was death his emotions had chosen. Death rather than surrender to that realm of which Galt was so radiant a sun. In the person of Galt, he knew he had sought the destruction of all existence. It was not by means of words that his knowledge confronted his consciousness. As all his knowledge had consisted of emotions, so now he was held by an emotion and a vision that he had no power to dispel. He was no longer able to summon the fog to conceal the sight of all those blind alleys he had struggled never to be forced to see. Now, at the end of every alley, he was seeing his hatred of existence. He was seeing the face of Cheryl Taggart with her joyous eagerness to live, and that it was this particular eagerness he had always wanted to defeat. He was seeing his face as the face of a killer whom all men should rightfully loathe, who destroyed values for being values, who killed in order not to discover his own irredeemable evil.
"No,"
he moaned, staring at that vision, shaking his head to escape it.
"No, no."
"Yes," said Galt.
He saw Galt's eyes looking straight at his as if Galt were seeing the things he was seeing. I told you that on the radio, didn't I? Said Galt. This was the stamp James Taggart had dreaded, from which there was no escape, the stamp and proof of objectivity.
No,
he said feebly once more, but it was no longer the voice of a living consciousness. He stood for a moment, staring blindly at space. Then his legs gave way, folding limply, and he sat on the floor, still staring, unaware of his action or surroundings.
Jim, called Mooch.
There was no answer. Mooch and Ferris did not ask themselves or wonder what it was that had happened to Taggart. They knew that they must never attempt to discover it, under peril of sharing his fate. They knew who it was that had been broken tonight. They knew that this was the end of James Taggart, whether his physical body survived or not.
Let's get Jim out of here, said Ferris shakily. Let's get him to a doctor, or somewhere.
They pulled Taggart to his feet. He did not resist. He obeyed lethargically, and he moved his feet when pushed. It was he who had reached the state to which he had wanted Galt to be reduced. Holding his arms at both sides, his two friends led him out of the room. He saved them from the necessity of admitting to themselves that they wanted to escape Galt's eyes. Galt was watching them. His glance was too austerely perceptive.
We'll be back, snapped Ferris to the chief of the guards. Stay here and don't let anyone in. Understand? No one.
They pushed Taggart into their car, parked by the trees at the entrance.
We'll be back,
said Ferris, to no one in particular, to the trees and the darkness of the sky. For the moment, their only certainty was that they had to escape from that cellar, the cellar where the living generator was left tied by the side of the dead one.